Welcome once again to LakeshoreLineNow.com as we continue on with our series of interviews for the contested positions on the November general ballot. This time around, we are talking Fire Commissioner for District Number 7, Chelan Fire and Rescue. And we are here with William Bassett. Bill, he prefers to be called. We'll go with that, Bill. First off, welcome.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate you spending time with me.
Looking forward to the conversation, Bill. And tell me, first off, a little bit about who is Bill Bassett?
Sure, thank you. I'm a small business owner here in town. I run a healthcare software company. I've been in Chelan, Chelan's been part of my life for over 19 years, and my wife and I chose to make Chelan our full-time home when we were able to get it there with the kids being, you know, away in college. And so now that's happened. We had bought a place 4 years ago and have been living here full-time. And just love it, you know, wouldn't choose to be anywhere else. And, you know, part of the reason I decided to run for fire commissioner is really kind of twofold. I mean, first of all, I come from a history of a family. I actually grew up in a very similar town in New England. It was in the middle of apple country. And my family were always the ones who kind of raised their hand and were kind of the community leaders. And I kind of inherited just that approach. And so now that I'm here full time, I want to give my part, you know, giving back to the community and help make things as strong and safe as we possibly can. With particular focus on the fire commission position, you know, I'm running for the position of fire commissioner really to make sure that the citizens and the businesses of Chelan, we continue to be protected from the devastating effects of fire. I mean, we've all experienced it. This year hasn't been bad, but certainly we've had some bad years recently. And if we begin to make some moves away from where we currently have as far as service protection, it can be both good and bad. If we don't do it correctly, it could be really pretty devastating. We could see huge increases in property destruction. We could see massive increases in loss of life. And we could see higher insurance rates go up and possibly other taxes. So it has this kind of negative downward spiral effect if we don't do it correctly. But I think there's a way we can do it correctly and make sure we're keeping our taxes as low as possible, not spending more money on things we don't need to, and still have great protection for all the communities and businesses in our community.
Let me ask you, one of the elements of this would be then a strategy, if you have one in the thought process on apparatus replacement for the district. My understanding is there's very little to no budget through about 2022 for apparatus replacement. How do you address that issue? And are there other ways maybe to get there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that, again, we have to be a bit pragmatic with this as we kind of look at things. There's a lot of apparatus that's out there. I know there's steps being taken right now to improve it, to begin to do some combination work, because Chelan's in a very unique community. I mean, from a fire perspective, the fire department provides a huge amount of rescue services as well as fire protection services. Actually, the rescue services take up a significant amount of the number of calls that happen on just a pure number point of view. We have to be able to prepare to do structural fires, especially for some large businesses in town. And we have a huge wildfire issue around here. And we need to be, capable in all of those. We live on a most beautiful lake in the world. And so there's certainly rescue capabilities we need to be able to do for that. Hikers and climbers and mountain bikers and all kinds of stuff, there's certainly rescue things that come up there. So we have a very diverse environment which we have to support, protect, for both the community and the tourists that come in as well. From an pure apparatus standpoint, another thing to note, and again, this is, I think, interesting. If you take a look at the way the Washington State Insurance Bureau looks at grading a community, and again, a higher grade directly can increase taxes. It can double, triple, or even quadruple the current insurance rates you're paying now. Surprisingly, the capabilities of the apparatus to support fire prevention and firefighting only in structure fires, not wildfires, only for structure fire is what is one of the counting factors that they look into. So we're a little bit of a disadvantage from an apparatus standpoint because we're only really graded on our capabilities for structural fires, yet we need to be able to cover all the other issues that we talked about just a few seconds ago. So it's going to take some real, I think, thoughtful discussions about prioritization, what gets done, how we move forward with investing the appropriate dollars, and you know, where do we best secure that money from overall? Whether it's in, you know, being more efficient is probably the first place we'd take a look at. I think we can probably find some pretty significant efficiencies.
Do you also look at other sources, perhaps, of not necessarily new equipment, but used equipment? For example, you're talking about wildland fires and the need to be able to work fires in this area that we live in. Department of Natural Resources has been stepping up in the last year or two and donating some of their older equipment to various communities around the state of Washington, and I think even some maybe nearby Antioch might have gotten one of those pieces of equipment. Are those other ways that you can kind of reach out and say, hey, we'd like to put our hand up and maybe be in line for some of that?
Yeah, I think those are exactly some of the things that we can do. We be, you know, think outside the box is what I like to say. You know, let's not do the traditional, let's think outside the box. And again, I come from Massachusetts, I'm a New Englander, and so I'm pretty thrifty as it comes down to it. And we try to figure ways to, you know, make things happen with spending very little money. I think another great example of that thought process is what was recently done with the Marine 71, the fireboat or boat. Not everybody likes it, but from a real practical point of view, we found the boat, the fire department found the boat for very little money in surplus, and we're able, through some really great donations and other things, to bring an asset now into the department that is worth thousands of times more than what was paid for. So even if it, you know, turns out to be not a worthwhile program in the long run, it will be a revenue generator for the department. So again, some really great thinking that's going on. I think we have to continue that vein to really dig into it.
That boat got a couple of early opportunities this summer with vehicles ending up in the lake out in that Rocky Point area. And I believe in both cases, they were on the scene before just about anybody else.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's in what I think so far, it's proven to be a very valuable asset for the community.
And you mentioned insurance rates, and there's always dialogue about this. And can you maybe explain how the ability to have certain levels of service relates to what residents pay in their fire insurance rates?
Yeah, that's a very good and very complex question that we could spend about an hour and a half going through. The very high-level response kind of goes like this. There is a national standard that's used by insurance organizations basically to evaluate a community's ability to be effective in putting out fires. It's rated on a score from 1 to 10, 10's the worst and 1's the best. The evaluation process looks at a handful of measures, and again, this is standardized across the country, and those measures include the ability, they include staffing for the different fire departments. And the interesting part is you only get credit for those staff that are located in the fire department during the time of a call. And many people kind of look at that as career staffing, you know, career staff firefighters. Doesn't have to be career staffed, but the current equation is for every volunteer that's not located in the fire department when that call goes out, you need three of those volunteers to equate to one person who's actually in the actual building. So there's a whole bunch of math that goes to it. The bottom line is you have to have three times the volunteers reporting for a particular call to equate somebody that's actually in the fire department at that when that call goes out. So it's a very unique piece of math that's out there. Another factor is apparatus, and we talked about it. And again, we're only being evaluated on both of these things in our ability to put out structural fires. Wildland fires aren't even looked at. So we're already at a disadvantage in our community because of the huge amount of wildland fire potential that's out there. And other factors look at the ability for the community to provide adequate water supply. And there's a bunch of other things. But those are some of the big ones, really, that mostly kind of go into, some of these kind of go into the fire marshal's realm as well. So the simple kind of equation really just goes, even if you just look at just the staffing model, right, the staffing component of it. If we start moving towards a less career staff model, as some people have suggested, it may or may not be beneficial, But if you take a look at the entire math, we're going to have a much stronger turnout from the volunteer department staffers just to meet the current level of points for insurance.
You're kind of moving into what my next question was going to be, and that is literally the balance perhaps between career firefighters and volunteers, and where do you as a candidate for the fire commission land on this topic?
Yeah, and first of all, I think that both our volunteer program and our career program, you know, they're great. They're great people, all of them. They are doing their best for the community and volunteering their time or putting their life on the line, no matter what you call them. And so, you know, kudos to all of them who are doing that every single day in, day out. It's a simple equation, I think, when it comes down to taking, like I said, taking a look at the factors of what would increase insurance rates, you know. And so the two big things that are things we can manage easily are going to be what the staffing model looks like, and then what the apparatus model looks like and the capabilities of the apparatus that are there. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm an expert in all the details of this. There's people that are. As a matter of fact, I'm actually going to a conference this week in the Washington Fire Commission Association conference, who actually sets policy for the state. You know, the fire commissioner board doesn't make this stuff up. They actually have to follow a lot of rules and regulations. And then there's other things like national labor relations and so on and so forth. And there's an awful lot of staffing issues that are dictated by, you know, state and federal levels that have to be followed that most people don't know. So trying to understand the rules, make sure we're following the rules, making sure that the community and the businesses are protected as best as possible, and while not raising money or trying to make, you know, some savings from some efficiencies, is a pretty complicated task to be able to get through. And I think you have to have some experience in you know, moving and in adjusting all those pieces, you know, kind of all at one time, and be able to negotiate and be able to you know, strike a balance with other folks, both in the community and even on the fire commission, to be successful for, again, for the community.
Now, of course, there was recently a levy lid election that was run. It was soundly defeated. There's been a lot of talk about how do we, you know, the fire department would like to make a move to more career firefighters. The general public, at least in their vote, said no. Is there a disconnect there? Is it maybe the message isn't getting through, or is it just a matter of this is what we'd love to have, but the public is saying we can't afford to do that? Where do you think it lies in there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, from my vantage point, I think, first of all, none of us wanted to pay more taxes. I'm a taxpayer in Chelan. I don't want to pay any more taxes either. I think most of us are overly taxed. And, you know, I think one of the things that we really have to consider when we look at all of this, not just the, you know, the fire department, but all the stuff we're doing, is, you know, we have a fair number of folks who are in fixed income. And if we start, you know, raising rates, no matter if they're insurances or taxes or whatever, that's going to have a pretty devastating effect on those folks that are on, you know, fixed income as well. So we have to take that into account. So as getting back to your question about the disconnect in the community, I think that there has been a disconnect. There's been a lot, as I understand the history, as has been told to me by many folks in the community, that there has been a bit of a mistrust between the community. I think there's been a lack of transparency in the community. I think there's been just discord. And I think that by becoming much more transparent, but I think by putting out facts and figures and letting the public make decisions that are based on sound facts, sound figures, backed up data, as opposed to hearsay, conjecture, you know, lies, you know, whatever you want to say that's out there, is important. I mean, I don't see how a community of our size, with something that's important as loss of property, loss of life, potential, you know, increased amount of money that we're all paying, can be done, those decisions be made any other way than based on, you know, facts and figures. And then bringing that in a transparent manner, you know, to the community. And I will say, what's interesting, I think that the community right now seems to appreciate the level of service that's out there right now. In one of the community research projects that was done before the last levy, the community had stated that they were happy with the current levels of service. And I believe that was when there was the six staffers, six staffers were on full time at the fire department. They were in the grant program. And the community said that they were happy with that. They just weren't willing to pay more money for additional support. So if the community is relatively happy with that level, then, you know, the budget right now is actually looking good for the next couple of years without having to do anything else. Gives us an opportunity to go in and really begin to look at how do we find more efficiencies? How do we take a look at as an entire community, not just the fire department, but everybody who's doing community-based emergency response services and caring for the folks in the community to build a much more, you know, streamlined network that can provide, at least the same, if not better services for everybody that's out there.
Bill, you have a son in the fire department. Your opponent has brought up the question of nepotism as perhaps an area of concern. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, and that's actually a very fair question. And I'll start by saying, before I even decided to run for fire commissioner, I've spent a fair amount of time researching that particular question. I talked to the department, I talked to attorneys that I know who have been involved with nepotism laws. I myself am an employer, have been employing, you know, people all the time and have HR programs that, you know, help us with all that stuff. First of all, so let's talk about, first of all, what the law says. At the Washington state level, the RCWs actually have no restrictions on the definition of nepotism and or any type of relations specifically in this situation. They talk about unfair practices of employers, and there's some nepotism laws in there. They talk about unfair practices of labor unions, and there's some touching on there, and they actually talk about unfair practices of employment agencies, but nothing specifically related to this kind of situation. And actually, there's another Washington law that talks about discrimination because of marital relationships. But there's really no particular regulation that defines or deals with nepotism at the state level. In the county level, there actually is in the county, Chelan County Employee Handbook, there's a portion that talks about employment of relatives, and in fact what they say is that relatives of current employees may not occupy a position that be working directly or supervising their relative. And I think that the most assertive policy is out there is actually the one that Chelan Fire and Rescue had put out. I believe it's in 2016. It's their SOG 153, and it basically says the same thing, that the that no relative can work under direct supervision of another relative. And it goes into defining the relatives and so on and so forth. And I think that's actually good, sound policy. This has been vetted and tested several times already, and the policy is a strong policy. Now, to a practical point of view, so if my son goes from probationary firefighter to a chief during my time as a fire commissioner, I will gladly step down from those conversations. The last thing I want to do is spend any more time supervising him. I've already spent enough time, managing and supervising him as he was growing up, and I certainly want to do that in a professional environment. So, again, if he goes that quickly up to chief, I'm happy to, step out of the equation and not be part of that conversation. But other than that, there is no rules that prevent this from happening whatsoever.
And aside from the rules, you don't see it as being any kind of an issue?
No, if you take a look at the position, right, and this is another thing. I think if you take a look at what the position is, the specific job responsibilities of the fire commissioner and the board, first of all, the chief reports to the board, and that's it, right? The board is responsible for determining the levels of service and establishing goals of the fire department. It's responsible for determining the type and level of funding and approving budgets, which they're going to start kind of going through that. Actually, the next commissioner will have to approve the budget almost immediately when they start in office in November, just because of the time framing sequence to make sure the fire department is funded in 2020. The board, fire commissioner, and the board also establishes policies and approves operational procedures. It supervises the chief. The two big things that really guides the strategic planning process, I actually have a incredible amount of experience in doing strategic planning for 30 years. And it lastly represents the district to the public. And I think that's an area where the board can do a much stronger job in representing to the public, you know, the fire department and what the goals and objectives are, and get more buy-in and really, you know, begin to build a really strong relationship to reflect the desires of the entire community, you know, the businesses, the orchardists, you know, the small homeowners, you know, and so on and so forth, in a way that's, again, pragmatic, but also making sure that we're looking at the future so we protect ourselves today, but also, you know, gear up for what potentially could happen tomorrow.
Let's talk about the makeup of the commission itself.
Sure.
Three members.
Correct.
There has been some talk in the community about perhaps there's a need to expand the size of the commission. And I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, actually, it's one of my thoughts as well, too. I'm going to be spending a bunch of time attending some sessions, again, at the Washington Fire Commission Association meeting here this weekend, and investigating just that exact, what did the process look like of going from a 3 to a 5-person board, let's say. What are the pros? What are the cons? I'm going to talk to some folks who are on 5, you know, level boards and see what they say. I don't think there's any harm done with more broad representation of the community on a board. I think that the more solid, concrete opportunity to really debate and discuss the issues and to come up with some really solid programming and plans going forward is a good thing, you know. But it has to be in a way that's, you know, smart and dignified and uses facts and figures and interacts with the public. Just sitting around and, you know, complaining and talking hearsay conjecture, that's not a positive thing. I don't think that's good for anybody. And I don't think that, whether it's a 3-person board or 5-person board, you know, in that case, that doesn't particularly matter. But I think moving to a 5-person board is something that definitely needs to be looked at.
All right. And as you look at the operation of Chelan Fire and Rescue District Number 7, are there maybe just a couple of areas that you'd like to hone in on that you see as the key issues facing the fire district in the next couple of years?
Yeah, great question, Dennis. And so, you know, I'd alluded to one of the first things I think we can do over the next couple of years, it really is take a look at how we become more efficient as an organization. I think there's probably two areas right off the bat that where we can start. You know, first of all, if you take a look at the way we're currently staffing and evaluating some of the programs, we're looking at volume-based programs, particularly in, say, the volunteer program, right? We really focus on, you know, recruits. And while that is certainly something that is important, what's more important is having recruits become qualified volunteers and having them become a volunteer and be part of the community from a service point of view for a longer period of time. As an example, and these are rough numbers, but in the 2018 volunteer class, it was approximately 30 volunteers. It was one of the largest volunteer, you know, recruit class they ever had, which is fantastic. And the average cost to train a recruit to get them ready to actually be able to, you know, go to calls and to be a contributing volunteer firefighter, I guess is the word, is about $7,200 in cost to get them up and ready to go for the training and the gear and so on and so forth, which is fine. You know, if that's what it costs, that's what it costs. Out of that 30 member recruit class, in the spring we heard that only 4 are still active. That equates to about a $200,000 what I'll call loss or lack of return on investment. Which is unsustainable. I mean, it really is unsustainable. You know, we cannot be a training ground for the other fire departments, you know, in the state or the country. Now, if we want to become a great, I think we have a great training program. And I think we really have a great training program, but we need to focus on retention, right? What can we do to solve the problems, to keep those folks in the volunteer program, if that's where they choose to be, for a longer time? And there's a lot of ways to take a look at that. I mean, you know, Douglas County has their intern program, and there's a few other different types of models that are around in the United States. But again, I think retention is a way to become more efficient and actually get a much better return on the dollars that we're investing in those people for the community.
Do you have any sense if that rate of attrition is typical of a rural fire district, or is it specific to Chelan?
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, that's an area that we have to research. I have heard that there is certainly an increase in attrition rate nationwide in volunteer programs. And I've also heard that it's very difficult to recruit new firefighters, new younger firefighters. It's a career that seems to be declining when it comes to the folks who want to be involved with that. And again, I don't have actual facts and figures. That's what I've heard. But those are areas that I'll go and spend some time trying to validate and see if, you know, there is a real trend there. And at the same time, I think we need to try to figure out ways of how we can solve what some of the problems are. I mean, let's talk to the volunteer program folks that are out there and ask them why they're not part of the program anymore, you know? And then maybe bigger community issues we need to solve. I mean, we all know housing is an issue, right? Cost of living here is pretty difficult. So that may be one of the problems. I don't know. But if it is, then as a community, let's start kind of tackling those things.
Appreciate your answers to these questions. Anything we haven't maybe tackled at this point that you'd still like to get across to those that haven't cast their ballots as yet?
You know, I really appreciate your time and making time to talk more with me, and to all folks who are listening, I appreciate you actually listening to this. You know, I mean, really, I'll just do a quick close here. And you know, I'm asking for your vote because, in my opinion, I have the skill set. I have the unique experience both in strategic and financial planning. I have the conviction of duty, and I certainly have the temperament that's required to be effective as a fire commissioner. I will build and sustain an appropriate balance between maintaining adequate levels of protection and strong fiscal management. I am not in favor of any tax increases, no matter what you may hear out there in social media or other things that are being said by, you know, my opponents. I've actually never said that, and that's the last thing I want to do. Just because somebody's position is to lower taxes, not to levy lift, doesn't mean my position is the opposite of that. And I think that's an unfair statement. So, no, I hate raising taxes. There's no reason to do that right now. And we need to figure out where that balance is. You know, as your fire commissioner, I certainly represent the needs of our community today and help manage the change required to protect us all in the future. And I think that's really what we need to do. You know, we need to try to find that, strike that balance as we begin to change and grow as a community, and make sure that, you know, we're protecting property, we're protecting life, and keeping the money we pay out, whether it's insurance or taxes, as low as possible, and getting something in return for it.
Bill Bassett, William on the ballot. We want to make sure we're clear on that when you take a look at the ballot, if you have not voted as yet. Running for fire commissioner in fire district number 7, Chelan Fire and Rescue. We thank you so much for your time.
Dennis, thank you so much for taking the time to spend with me today. I appreciate it, and you're doing a great, great service to the community with everything you do. Thank you.